This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
And here we go with our Lifetime Income series. Last week, we discussed the issue of lump sum or annuity. If suddenly you are told your services are no longer required, and they're going to give you a lump sum or annuity, and this is happening to a lot of older workers right now, but to some younger ones as well, what do you do? And you really need to understand that you're at a bifurcated choice here, and whichever road you go down, you're pretty well stuck on it once you do. So there's a need to examine that. With a lot of higher increasing unemployment on the road that we're on, as we've discussed earlier, that employment number is just going to go up because Congress and the Obama administration are not doing anything to deal with it right now. Last week, we do not have time to get into a case study, and we need to at least try to do that this week, the subject being lump sum or annuity, and what do I do when they throw this thing at me?
All right, this week we're going to call this the case of the Springers, Carl and Tish. Carl is age 64. Tish is age 61. This was a case we worked on last year. Carl was basically laid off, John. That's maybe a polite word. They called it kind of like an early retirement incentive. Basically, they said, you know, take it or you're gone. And you're seeing this with a lot of companies, especially with older workers, with the cost of health care. Because you start getting into your 60s, health care premiums for companies start to really go up and become a considerable portion of a person's pay. But basically what they offered Carl is they said, look, we're going to give you a severance package, a one-year paid salary as a severance. We will cover your medical with the company plan to age 65, and Carl being age 64 at that time, at age 65, he would go on Medicare. And that was really important to Carl because Carl has type 2 diabetes, adult onset diabetes. Now, Tish, on the other hand, was 61, so she's 3 years younger than Carl, good health. And about 15 years ago, when their kids had basically grown up and they became empty nesters, Tish became a certified nurse's assistant. So she works at one of the local hospitals. Now, here's the key. Carl was making about $84,000 as a salary. Tish's salary was about $31,000. So between them, they were making $115,000. Now, Carl is laid off. He's got 1 year's worth of severance, but at the end of that year of severance, that $84,000 goes away. That's a major portion of their monthly income. And what we did is, as we always do when you're faced with these kind of things, we had to kind of zero in and do some things that really had to get them thinking on their personal finances.
I imagine at this stage the poploger, you know what that is, a poploger?
No, I always fascinated by your vocabulary. This is a new word.
The poploger is the ogre Poplava.
Okay.
The ogre Poplava probably brought up the B word, do a budget, which, you know, everybody gets cold feet at that point and their hands start shaking. Let me guess, you did that, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, because, Carl got 1 year's worth of severance pay. So, you know, that $84,000 ends in 12 months. You know, what is it going to cost you guys to live? And so we started out with a basic budget, and that number for them was roughly about $7,000 a month, or almost Carl's entire salary of $84,000. And then I got them to think of, okay, let's throw in, because they do have some recreation, and their recreation, they owned a motorhome, by the way, which was free and clear, and they like to take a couple weeks vacation out of the year. And those motorhome trips, go for a week, roughly with their RV club, sometimes 10 days, could run anywhere from $3,500 to $4,000. And, you know, obviously, if he was going to be retired, the wish list would be take at least three of those trips a year, and that was roughly about $10,500. Total expenses, including the wish list, was $95,000 a year. So Carl's salary of $84,000 basically covered their basic living expenses, and then what Tish earned paid for taxes and paid for the wish list, the goodies, the RV trips, the vacations, and things of that nature. All right, so let's take a look at, okay, what's going to replace $84,000? Well, if we take a look at their assets, they owned a home here in Rancho Bernardo. It was worth about $700,000. They had a mortgage of roughly about $300,000 on that house. So they still had $400,000 of equity. They're one of the fortunate few because they managed to buy their house early on. Even though it wasn't worth as much as it was at the peak of the market, they still had equity. Carl had $95,000 in IRAs, which was the result of a couple rollovers of some previous companies he worked for, plus some contributions. His 401k program with the company was worth about $475,000. Tish's IRA was worth about $30,000. Her 401k at the hospital was worth about $70,000. And they had cash in the bank and CDs, roughly about $75,000. So they had $740,000 in equity in their home of about $400,000. The problem is their house is worth $700,000. They had a little over $700,000 of investment assets. And John, in this low interest rate market, it just wasn't, it just isn't going to cut it.
Well, everybody could qualify here, I'm assuming, for Social Security. Carl could get it, and then Tish could get it a little later. Any pensions that they qualified for?
No, the only thing that Carl had was his 401k program. Now, the good news for him is full retirement age for Social Security would be age 66. So being age 65 at the time, plus a one-year extension of severance pay, would take him to age 66. And his Social Security would be roughly about $1,800 a month, roughly about almost $22,000 a year. Tish's case, unfortunately, because she started work late, plus her salary is not as high, and also Tish is age 61, she would get roughly about $1,200 if she worked another 5 years to her full retirement age. At age 66, she'd get $1,200 a month, but she did not want to do that. So if she took her Social Security at age 62, she would get roughly 75% of that, which would be roughly about $900. That would produce roughly about $11,000 a year. So roughly, John, their Social Security income would be a little over $32,000, actually close to $32,500 a year. Here's where we're running into a problem. The basic budget, $84,000, back out Social Security of $32,000, they had a budget gap roughly of $51,000 a year. Throw in the bucket wish list of, three RV trips a year. You're talking about a total budget gap of $62,000.
I always imagine if you sit down and do this, this comes as a shock for a lot of people, because, a lot of times you go through your career and you're thinking to yourself, well, just yesterday I graduated from high school. Why am I retiring?
Where'd the years go?
Yeah, where did it all go? Because you're always planning on doing something here. And in this case, all they had was the 401k. They didn't have a defined benefit plan, some Social Security. And so this really does come as a shock when you say, this isn't going to cut it. What are we going to do?
And that's a great thing about doing a budget, because you can take a look at where are your major expenses coming from. And one of the things that was brought up in the conversation, and not by me, by the way, it was brought up by Tish, and that was, we got a lot of equity in our house. It's a bigger house. The kids aren't here anymore. We really don't need this big place. It takes a lot of maintenance, fixing up, and just taking care of the house. And that mortgage payment on $300,000, they were fortunate they refinanced it, But, you know, that was over $1,500 a month, $18,000 a year, over $7,000 in property taxes. And I related very well to Tish because I said, you know, one of the problems that you guys have is half of your net worth, if you take your house worth about $700, is in a house. And that house is not producing any income. You have way too much in a non-producing asset. And so we looked at various options. And the first option would be for Tish to postpone retirement. Well, first of all, she was going to have to work another year anyway because she couldn't get Social Security to age 62. So she had to work another year, but she was not keen on working another 5 years to age, let's say, 66, with the idea that she would pick up about another 25% on her Social Security, or roughly $300 a month, $3,600 a year. Carl had no intention. I mean, you know, when you're almost 65, it's really hard to get a job in terms of not too many employers want to hire somebody at age 65. Number one is it's very expensive, especially when it comes to health care and benefits. And so he wasn't keen. So option one would be Tish to basically postpone retirement, or Carl find a part-time job. That didn't seem to go over well with either of them. Option two, which would be to sell the home and downsize and pay cash for the home and use and free up some of the equity that they had in their home. In other words, to add to their capital base. And the third option would be in terms of maybe some kind of combination. I mean, it was obvious that Tish was going to have to work at least another year in order to get her Social Security benefits. And since she already brought it up, they both agreed that looking for a house was a good idea. And the other thing is one of their friends in their RV club lived in a manufactured home community. And when this idea first began to surface, we began to explore because, unfortunately, Rancho Bernardo, Southern California, home prices can vary widely depending on what part of town, what city you live in. So obviously, if they went east or north, the value of real estate came down. So they could go into North Escondido, Valley Center, where properties were a lot cheaper, or they could go even inland further than that. They wanted to stay close to Escondido because Tish worked at the hospital there, and so that was important. She didn't want to make a long commute. So those were some of the options, John, that we took a look at, and it was nice that they're already thinking in a good way in the sense that, hey, we have this big asset called a house with a lot of equity, a lot of upkeep. We don't need all this space. Let's free up some of that equity, especially now that real estate prices in Southern California were actually starting to go up. The market was starting to pick up. And so this option was already in their mind when Carl got laid off.
You know, whenever you're trying to lay out something like this, when people's money is involved, there's always a series of emotional hurdles that you go over, especially if, as you were citing here, plan A isn't going to work. Then there's just that kicks in, you know, this fear. How do you get them over to plan B and say, well, okay, it's, you know, all is not lost. Plan B is just ahead.
Well, I mean, that came up in the process, and it was basically addressing some of their major concerns that they put on the questionnaire that we had. Right at the top of the list is outliving their assets, which, because they thought they'd have a lot more assets than they did. They thought their house would be worth a lot more, and at one time it was worth close to over $900,000. So, you know, seeing $200,000 of your home equity evaporate is quite disconcerting. Another thing, they all got hit, as many Americans did, with the bear market and stocks. Everybody's 401k program got hit. And unfortunately for both of them, as I'll get to in just a second, they reallocated their 401k programs into the wrong areas. And so outliving their assets, the fear of inflation, because as Tish did the grocery shopping, I mean, you know, any housewife makes a better economist because you see these costs on a weekly basis. Every time you go to the supermarket or if you pay the bills, and in this family, Tish actually paid the bills, which is a good idea, I think, because women tend to outlive men. In many generations, you know, the husband was the main breadwinner. He paid the bills. He did the investing, and the wife was left unknowledgeable in those areas, and all of a sudden the husband passes away and the wife is faced with these responsibilities. So they had a fear of higher inflation. Third, which is an obvious one, is investment returns in the future would be less than expected, especially given the rates that they were earning at the bank on their CDs. And also medical cost, because Carl had type 2 diabetes. It was controllable with diet and exercise, but once again, that is a concern. So the problem was, is they were not outside. The only thing that was really assured for them was they knew from Social Security what their Social Security benefits were going to be. They weren't that confident about their investment returns. And I would say both of them, given the experience they went through, seeing the part of the equity in their house evaporate, their 401ks were downsized in that crisis, they wanted a degree of certainty, as I'm sure a lot of investors are out there. And they also recognized, John, that one half of their assets were invested in their home, and there was too much of an asset in a non-producing asset. One of the reasons they wanted to downsize is the real estate market had picked up. And so they're, you know, at least the market had been going up instead of going down. And so they wanted to cash out on a large portion because they still had a considerable amount of equity in their home.
Well, it's real clear that, you know, Tish didn't want to work, but Carl, I mean, he was, let's face it, there is a certain level of discrimination that goes on out there. Carl's, you know, 60 to 65 age range. Working is not realistic. He should probably do something like going into talk radio or something.
Yeah, put in an 8-hour day as we do on Fridays.
Yeah, there we go. Or open a hotel, as John Cleese would say, right? You know, from Fawlty Towers. How about investment assets? Because we're in a, you know, when you look at the bull market status, how did this factor in?
It was a problem, but they were open to suggestions. I mean, they were smart enough to know that leaving your money in the bank at less than a 0.5% wasn't going to get them into retirement. And they also had the fear of inflation, so they need to do something. And then you also had Carl's potential health problems. Tish's job, one of the reasons she only wanted to work another year, is that, you know, with the demands at the hospital, the job was somewhat stressful. And the unfortunate thing is most of their assets were in bond funds and cash. Now, they didn't panic in 2008 and 2009. They were smart enough to say, look, I don't want to sell when the market's down this much. I'll wait till the market comes back. But what they did do is they panicked in May of 2010 during the flash crash when the market lost about 1,000 points in about 5 minutes. That's when they made the asset allocation. They just went into bonds and money market funds because they thought, oh, my God, you know, we held on to our stocks because we thought they were coming back. We never imagined that we could have another 40% crash. So there was sort of a little bit of fear there. But I think the most important thing is Carl really didn't want to work part-time. Tish only wanted to work another year. She did not want to work 5 years. And quite honestly, working 5 years to get another, or let's say an additional 4 years to get $300 a month, that really didn't make sense. Now, we talked about downsizing, and that probably was the real key factor here, because they could find, if they moved north out of Rancho Bernardo, they could either get a townhouse or a smaller home if they moved north. Now, they had a friend that lived in a community that was manufactured homes in an area of a golf course in northern Escondido, and they were looking at a property there that their friend had told them that come on the market through an estate sale, the previous owner having passed on, and the estate was liquidating in it. And it was a home roughly about close to a little over 1,500 square feet. It would be about the asking price was about $189,000. But the important point is, by downsizing and looking in that range, that would free up $200,000 in capital. But here's the real key factor here. It would free up $200,000, which could go to work producing anywhere from 4 to 6.3%, which would bring in an additional $8,000 or close to $1,000 a month. But here's the big savings. By downsizing and getting rid of their $300,000 mortgage, that saved $18,000 a year. By going to a smaller home and getting rid of the higher property taxes, that would save $16,000. So those two factors, just getting rid of the house and downsizing, would increase or reduce their monthly budget from $7,000 a month down to $5,000 a month. Social Security would produce $2,700 a month, so their income gap was $2,300. Add in the wish for list is three. So now, instead of $740,000, we would have $940,000 working for them. And the other thing is where we reduce their living expenses by $2,000 a month. And that's exactly what seemed the most logical thing to do, because that was something they can control. They could cash out on the equity while the real estate market was picking up. They could get a free and clear home and also be close to their friends, and then also free up about $200,000 of capital in addition to reducing their monthly expenses. That was a delta change, John. That one factor alone was a delta change of about $3,000 alone on a $7,000 monthly budget. So that was a big factor. Unfortunately, we've run out of time in this segment, but what we'll do is we'll talk about the solution to Carl and Tish's problem and how it was solved next week on the program.
Well, Jim, if people find themselves in a situation such as Carl and Tish, or they would just like to get in contact with you about putting together a retirement plan, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, we have a toll-free number, 888-486-3939. 888-486-3939.
A series of dates will be coming up over the next few months, which are going to be key as we approach this fiscal cliff, determining exactly the pitch of the cliff, how bad is it going to be, and whether or not this can be avoided. We have everything from the Fed meeting coming up in October. We have the elections. That's going to be a watershed because the politicians are not going to do anything prior to that time except try to get their people in office. And so the conversation in the political rhetoric will not match reality in any way, shape, or form. Lame duck Congress in November, and it's going to be really interesting. Also, we have our first presidential debate coming up next week, which I'm looking forward to, I might say. Although, I'll be honest with you, I've avoided most of the what's going on between President Obama and Governor Romney just because it's all blather. You know, it's not really hitting any of the critical issues.
No, in fact, a lot of the issues we've been covering here on the program, including this week's fiscal cliff and some of the details, tax issues, spending issues, entitlement issues, debt issues, interest rate, money. John, none of that stuff is being covered in the campaign. It's all he said, she said. Oh, well, in this case, he said and he said. But what I find probably the most fascinating part of this election, one of the reasons you don't want to vote for one of the candidates is because they are successful. Governor Romney was successful as a businessman. He was successful turning around the Olympics. He was successful as a governor. Now, all of a sudden, being successful is now become a liability. And that's sort of strange, because we've always looked up as a country, up at people that were successful, whether they're successful as entertainers, successful as athletes, or successful as business people, anywhere from, you know, a Bill Gates to a Steve Jobs, or successful in the financial markets like Warren Buffett. But somehow now success has become a bad thing, which I find almost a sea change in itself regarding even issues of how to try to resolve something. But it's really going to be an interesting month starting on Monday. We do have, what is it, three debates, John? I think there's next week we have the first presidential debate, and then I think the next one is followed by a debate between Paul Ryan and Vice President Biden. And then we have a Fed meeting, and then we have GDP numbers, and then a week before the election, we'll have the unemployment numbers for the month of October. So there is going to be no shortage of stuff to talk about here on the program. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.